is Welcome to Super Garbage Day, a retro video game review show where my co-host and I play a game 20 years or older that you, the listener, chooses. Every episode, we randomly pick a game submitted by the community to play, kindly dissect, and then discuss. Oh my, I almost made it through that without effing up. Welcome to episode 56. I am your host, B. Ross, the science boss, and with me is my co-host,
the Pink Ninja Van Fernal.
The Pink Ninja. So, what's new in the land of Super Garbage Day? Well, the Super Garbage Bowl 2024 has been announced, and the console this year is, in fact, the PlayStation 1. If you are not familiar with the Super Garbage Bowl as an event, well, every year we pick a game system and have the community submit one game each, no doubles, that they think is the worst game on that console. Then we, Van Fernal and I, will set up a bracket, randomly choose the games. So imagine like a, you know, March Madness style bracket. And we will play every single one. We will judge and pick winners for every matchup until there's only one game left. That game wins. And if that's your game, you win a special stupid prize. So this year we're going to do a couple prizes. It's going to be fun. If you want to jump into that, it's free for the most part. Join the Discord. Jump in there, go to the Super Garbage Bowl channel, and then you can add a submission as of May 1st. If you're a patron, though, you can add your submission as of April 1st. So, all that out of the way. Also, check out our Super Garbage Day YouTube channel and the retro stream with Van Fernal. They are now partner channels. And occasional streaming on the Super Garbage Day Twitch, and way more streaming happening on Van Fernal's retro stream. Everything I just stated is in the link tree in the show notes. Click, have fun, and let's get on with it. Everybody, it's time for the retro question of the week. This question comes from me. What video game to TV show adaptation would be an absolutely awful idea, but you would watch every single episode of? Van Fernal, what's your choice here?
All right, so I really thought about this a lot, and I will have to go with The Binding of Isaac.
Whoa! Are we talking like live action or animated? I guess either way, it's going to be disturbing.
I don't see there's any way you can make that live action, because I think the only way that game is even exists is because it's animated in a cute style, but that is the most offensive and depraved game I have ever played in my life, because everything about it in terms of like the themes and all that is just horrible. But if they did that animation about that, I will watch that in a heartbeat. But
hear me out.
Yes.
Hear me out. Have you seen the movie Coraline?
Yes.
Imagine it done in that style. Stop motion, claymation.
I mean, it's not like we need to sleep at night anyways, because that will be freaking horrifying.
I mean, that's the perfect style to do that, though. And it's like a mini series. Oh, and the whole idea of Binding of Isaac is about, it's like, it's religion and also other things I don't want to state. I mean, if people listening know what the Binding of Isaac is. So, that's a brutal submission, man.
Everything that's wrong in the world, it's in that game. So, but I think it will make a very interesting watch.
Indeed. We also had some of the community from Discord chime in this week on the retro question of the week. Rev said the guy game. You remember that, Van? You know the most illegal game you can get on the PlayStation?
The guy. It refresh my memory about that guy game. What is that?
Well, okay. So the guy game was a to sum it up, it is Girls Gone Wild, the video game. Literally. It's like shows nudity. It's a guy doing a game show on a beach with girls that like you answer the questions kind of like You Don't Know Jack style. And then if you answer it right, the girls flash. But the game was super controversial when they found out later that a lot of the women in it were underage.
So holy crap.
Like, yeah, it's like way bad.
And here I thought like BMX XXX was the worst thing like in that system.
The The guy game as a show. Come on, Rev. That's like that's some high level, pure uncut Colombian trolling right there. Thank you so much, Rev. Zodiac said Earth Defense Force 2017. By the way, Chris, I love that game. Love that game. And I'm trying to get my son to play it with me because it's split screen. But that would be such a dope show. It would almost be really close to Starship Troopers. Are you familiar with that series, Van?
Starship Troopers or the
Earth Defense Force?
Yeah, but is that really a bad idea for a show, though? I think that'd be really cool.
No, it's not. It all takes place on Earth, so it's Starship Troopers, but on Earth, you know. I think that's a great idea. So, Chris Copeland, your answer is valid. Invalid, sorry. And here's the answer I came up with is I'm going to go with what Seek Ye Wisdom said, because this is a great answer. And he said Ghosts and Goblins. So I replied to that saying absolutely down with that under two circumstances. A, it has to be live action. And B, it has to be produced by the same team that made the first Super Mario Brothers movie, that weird one in the 90s. And I'm all for it.
You know
Let's
what?
Go.
You know what my idea will be for a Ghosts and Goblins TV show? It will be kind of, you remember those in MTV when they had those animations between commercials that they were like really short?
Yeah, kind of like Liquid Television.
Yeah, so basically have these little snippets of little situations where Arthur always ends up dying. Like, just snippets that... it's like enemy situations, boulders falling, that kind of thing. And then he just ends up being a skeleton and that's where it ends. Just like really short. I think that'll be really cool.
If I feel like it would be an Adult Swim show. That's where it would land. And it would be fantastic. He also said he would cast Kurt Russell, a bearded, burly Kurt Russell as Arthur. And I replied with, I would rather want a early, or should I say younger, Bruce Campbell with a beard to play Arthur. Which one of those two do you think would be a better Arthur? Bruce Campbell or Kurt Russell?
Wow. I mean, Kurt Russell is Kurt Russell, but Bruce Campbell has the chin, man. Like, you know, that big square, like jaw.
Yeah, he's got the charisma, but I don't know if he could play the character better. Anyways, I digress.
We're making it sound like Arthur is this like very developed character with all this, you know, personality. It's literally he's a mute knight that just like runs and dies. That's all he does.
He's just chasing after the tail, man. He's going through hell in a handbasket to get his girl.
Oh, he's going to hell in a handbasket for the girl twice.
Oh yeah. Well, the spoiler alert. Anyways, if you want to add to the retro question of the week, it is in the Discord. Feel free to go in there and drop as many retro questions of the week as you would like, and we will pick one and add it to the show. So I think it's time to ask, what are you playing? All right, what are you playing, Van? Anything new? Still Tekken?
Well, always Tekken, but actually I'm playing... So they shadow dropped the Stalker games for current gen consoles. So it was kind of crazy. So the Stalker series, that's that series takes place in Ukraine, typical post-Soviet nuclear wasteland type of thing. And that was a very big inspiration for the Metro games. And it's a series I always wanted to get into. Excuse me. But it was very janky on PC. So they released a new version with more quality of life and a little more accessible. And I'm actually playing them and they are very good, actually.
Speak for yourself, man. I love the Stalker series. I love Stalker Shadow of Chernobyl. I said that I said that like Sean Connery. Stalker Shadow of Chernobyl. But it played really well with a buttload of mods, and I haven't played that game in many years, and I'm happy to hear this. I was unaware until you told me right now. So
no, it caught me by surprise. And the thing is, again, I do understand there's a lot of that game has been modded to hell and it made very accessible, but I'm somewhat of a purist when it comes to games and I try to mod as little as possible. So I just want the most authentic experience, and the official release I know it's kind of weird, but this one, it has, you know, it has console controls for the gamepad and all that kind of thing, weapon wheel, that kind of stuff. So it's actually very convenient and a great way to play the game.
That's awesome. And does it still have the guitar playing around the campfire? Because if it doesn't have that, then I'm not in.
Oh, yeah, no, it has it. That very loud guitar playing that overpowers everything else. Yes, it's still there.
Because it's in your heart. That's awesome. Good to know. I am still playing Celeste. I streamed the other day. A lot of people in the community showed up. Thank you so much. Coming by and saying hi. I'm getting close. I'm almost near the end. I think I got 3 chapters left. I know it's going to get harder, but it's fine. I can take it. That's what she said. Also, then I'm going to start playing Prince of Persia directly after that for Backlog Eternal. Okay, let's get on with a new segment as our friend of the show and our co-host, Van Fernal, is here to tell us and explain the super garbage news. Let's go.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Super Garbage News, a segment of the show where we will talk about the hottest stories and current events in the gaming industry. In today's story, we have the quote-unquote controversy surrounding the release of Dragon's Dogma 2. As we know, the long-awaited sequel to Capcom's beloved cult classic was released last week, but what will typically be considered a joyous occasion has been marred by a series of issues which has the fanbase vociferously divided. Even though the game was well reviewed by mainstream gaming media, garnering a very respectable score of 87 on Metacritic as of the time of this report, upon release the game suffered from unoptimized performance with CPU bottlenecks causing the frame rates to drop drastically in heavily populated areas even with high-end GPUs. This is especially noticeable on the console versions which have an uncapped frame rate which can fluctuate anywhere from 60 frames per second to dropping to the teens in worst case scenarios. Capcom are aware of these performance issues and communicated that they are working on a patch. Which lead us to the main controversy surrounding this release, microtransactions. Up to the moment of release, the Dragon's Dogma 2 store only contained the various versions of the game available for purchase. However, on release day, Capcom added 21 DLC purchases, which consist mostly of in-game items designed to make your experience more convenient. Even though most of these items can be acquired in-game without the need for spending real-world money, that has not stopped a big part of the fanbase of accusing Capcom of deliberately hiding the plans for microtransactions in order to boost the review scores of the game and of adding a pay-to-win element to the experience. This led to massive review bombing of the game in aggregate score sites and on Steam reviews. As of right now, the game stands at a 54% or mixed reception on Steam, with reviews that focus on the actual gameplay experience being mostly positive, while reviews that focus on poor performance and microtransactions being negative. Only time will tell what legacy this game will have, but we can only hope that it lives up to the beloved reputation of the original cult classic. That concludes our story of the week. Back to you, Beeros.
Okay, so Dragon's Dogma 2, on paper, everybody was excited about, and as you stated in your news segment, is kind of turning out to be awful situation. I'm not saying the game is awful. I want to play it, but it sounds like I can't play it, and that makes me really mad. I waited forever for the sequel, and it has problems. My Steam Deck can't play it. They introduced these microtransactions. And I also just read today that the Capcom stock went down massively after the whole announcement of the microtransactions. Oh, my God.
Woo. Yeah, the thing is, it's whatever side you stand on when it comes to microtransactions, a lot of people say, oh, if I paid full price for a game, I don't need the microtransactions. Other people say, you know, if you don't like them, don't spend the money. But the optics of it, of this, we didn't know about it. And then the very first day after all the reviews are out and everything, they just pop there. It's just not a good look.
Dude, they added microtransaction for fast traveling. How dare you, Capcom? How dare you do that? How you are the trailblazer for one of the worst microtransaction decisions in a time period where everybody hates microtransactions. God damn it. Especially with a game series I love.
And again, all of these, like most of these, you can actually acquire in games. So a lot of people are saying, you know, this is a nothing sandwich. But it's just, you don't do that, especially with such a high profile game. I have a very strong feeling once this game gets a couple patches in and the game, the performance improves and people get over the microtransactions, it's actually going to be a very beloved game. But just, it was a PR nightmare the way they went about it.
What a shame that that is where we're at these days in our video game culture, where we have to wait and wait for the bullcrap to happen and wait for the patches to roll in and wait for the game to be actually finished and let them announce their bad decisions and then go back on them. God, why? What happened? Ugh. And that's why retro games will always be the best. Anyways.
Yep. We were lucky that if a game was bugged, it was bugged forever. See, we didn't have to wait on all these patches and all this crap. We had consistency.
Yeah, or like getting a game disc and then having to download like 75% of the game. Oh, I'm over it. I retired with the Xbox 360, technically, because I'm just over the new systems. I don't want to mess with them. I have such a catalog of games. I don't care. Call me an old boomer. I don't give a crap. I'm not buying the new systems because they've done nothing but break my heart as a person who grew up with video games being something that's amazing and it's your escape and them trying to squeeze every penny out of you. I can go on for years about this, but I'm so disappointed in what gaming has become, and everybody should just stop buying new games and let the indie scene come back and be and take over and listen to people and let us all love games and please release the damn sequel to Hollow Knight already, please. Silk Song, where the hell is it? Anyways, okay, without further ado, it's time to jump into this jank fest, this banger of a game that I've played before and I have reviewed before, and you put on the Patreon poll, the Wheel of Retro, as a joke, and then you ended up choosing it. Wonderful. And this game, Bath of the Whack Manta, on the NES. I'm leaving it in.
Yeah!
Wrath of the Black Manta is a side-scrolling action game published by Taito for the Nintendo Entertainment System in North America, released in 1990, and in the PAL region in 1991. It is a localized version of Ninja Cop Saizo, a family computer game published by Kyugo in 1989. But with drastic changes in the game's graphics, soundtracks, level designs, and gameplay. With that said, let's talk first impressions. All right, this is your time to shine, Van. Give me your first impressions of Wrath of the Black Manta.
Wow. Okay. So first of all, I gotta say, you said that the American version, the Western version, has vast, like, changes. How these changes are for the better, I have no idea, okay, so first impressions, this game starts very intense, the music is banging, then I always found it funny that then you just like get the title screen and you see the logo on the right, and on the left the ninja is huge and kind of squeezed into the screen, you see him like if he stood up he will get out of the screen, like they said we're making this ninja just like big, and you're like, whoa, okay, this is real. And then when you start out, you start with a cutscene. So far you will see this in the original Ninja Gaiden, so it sounds familiar, but this cutscene is the goofiest thing. Like, first of all, the ninja is just sitting in the dark, I don't know if it's his house or an office, and the phone rings. And he's like, who could it be at this hour? By the way, this ninja's in full ninja gear just sitting in his house. So he gets up.
And purple.
Yeah, no, he's purple. Like, he's called the Black Manta. He's not black. Like, he's purple. Actually, I'm talking about his clothes, not his skin, just in case. Let's keep this PC.
Good. So, I was worried. We're on the verge of cancellation there.
Yeah, no, it's like, I'm your former co-host of Infernal. No. But the funny thing is the phone rings and then it's his master, apparently. And the ninja goes like, master, what's up? Like, okay. And it's about some kidnapping and all this. Like, the soundtrack is still going like full blast. And the master told him, you know, they kidnap one of his students and kids are disappearing and all that kind of stuff. And you're like, okay, so you get your mission and then the game starts. And this banger of a soundtrack that's been going on slows down to a crawl to the goofiest, like, first stage music. You know, it's... How would you describe this background music? It's like tame, and the ninja is just like walking on a breezed walk. So it the initial impression right there kind of stops like completely, and then the actual gameplay it's just weird. What do you think?
I think that I should have chose this game as my answer for which game should be a television series that is a bad idea, but I would watch every episode of, because the idea, I mean, it's so shoehorned. They're like, yes, this ninja's sleeping on his couch in his New York apartment, and they're like, hey man, kid, sorry to wake you up, there's kids being kidnapped, there's drugs, there's thugs, I need your help. And he's like, I'm on it, man. And then you just go outside of New York and starts this game where immediately you're like, wow, this game is cheap as hell. It's very cheap. And I think the music's okay. I like I said, the title track is not bad, but moving forward to the game, you kind of get sick of the music, and it's kind of repetitive for the most part. But at first impressions, and it's hard because I'm recollecting back to when I first played this game like 4 years ago for my old channel. And I remember just laughing at like, this is so ridiculous. So it's clearly it's trying to milk some of that ninja money when ninjas were like the big deal in the 80s. And it's doing everything it possibly can as cheap and as quick as it can to cash that dollar. And it's really apparent right from the get go.
Oh, yeah. No, this game, it's, I don't know if you've seen the actual cover. It's straight out of that ninja craze from the late 80s. Like, it's just the Black Manta is just in the cover, just doing like a ninja jump kick with like a scythe in one hand and the katana in the other.
The cover's dope. I like the cover. Like, but it doesn't represent the game.
Yeah, no, but clearly it was like that ninja exploitation of the 80s. That's what they were going for. And I think that's a lot of what the Western changes were aiming for. So we were the target demographic. You know, that's what when the Ninja Turtle craze was in full swing and everything.
Yeah, isn't it crazy how much the Ninja Turtles just changed the world in the 80s? And everybody was trying to bite a piece of that pie. You had Street Sharks, Battletoads. I love me some Battletoads, but obviously they were trying to get a piece of that Ninja Turtle pie.
The biker mice from Mars.
Oh yeah. Oh man, and we loved every bit of it. All right, well, let's talk about how the game plays in gameplay. So, it's a game where you, it's a side-scrolling game. It's not like Ninja Gaiden. It's not like Legend of Kage. It's not like these other, it's peers. It's kind of slow. It's a slow ninja game. You know, it's not quite Strider. It's slow-paced.
I actually think that it's very similar to the arcade Shinobi game. You think about it. You walk around, you throw ninja stars, you jump to a higher ground or a lower ground. When you get close to the enemies, you have a melee attack and you're constantly crouching behind crates and you're saving children. So in that aspect, I think it's almost a ripoff of Shinobi.
Yes, but also it tries to incorporate this little bit of this mystery and detective aspect where you have to like take a certain, like the red guys wearing red. Yeah, it cuts the cutscenes when you grab them and they're like, it's stupid. They do the same thing when you find little notes, you know, and the notes kind of tell you vague things, but it's like over explaining. The game's over explaining and also not explaining enough at the same time.
No, and it's kind of hilarious because the so these guys, the guys in red, if you get close to get them, you kind of grab them in a chokehold, and then you go into a cutscene where the Black Manta is always like, oh, asking, who are you? Who are you working for? And these guys, 90% of the time, they say, I don't know anything. And he just lets them go, apparently. So that's all it takes to get the Black Manta off your back. It's like, I'm just following orders. Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so the idea of every level is to attack enemies, get information, try to find children, and fight a boss. Also, there's a lot of going into areas, like going into doors that have these little areas that you fight three or four ninjas and it'll either leave a note or it'll refill your health, and it's very repetitive. And then you get to like a boss, and I think the first boss really sums up how disjointed and all over the place this game really is. And it's a gigantic ogre looking Brooklyn brawler looking guy, bald head, who has no frames of animation. Actually, none of the bosses really do. But it really shows you up front, like, what it's dealing with production and attention to detail.
Oh, yeah. No, it's so cheap. It's so cheap. The thing is, like, it's funny because the character sprite is surprisingly detailed, but then it has zero frames of animation. So it's just jumping around like completely stiff. It looks so bad.
And it's easy. Also, the game gives you these power ups, like these ninja. What are they called? God, it escapes me. You remember what they're called? The ninja power ups?
I think they just called them ninja magic. Like they
fly. No, it was called like ninja something. But they give you these. They kind of add these special powers that you accumulate that don't really help. Like in some areas they make you OP, and in other areas you just don't use them. And it's just another case of like everything being really rushed in the game. But you know, the game starts in New York and then you traverse to like Japan in the second level. And that's like isn't that like a flying area? Like, isn't that?
Oh, yeah. It's so weird. The second stage you start and there's these ninjas flying around in kites. And then the red ones, you can shoot them and you get in one of the kites and it basically becomes a side scrolling shoot 'em up, which is out of left field completely.
And a super jank one. Mind you.
Oh yeah, no, it's so bad.
And they were trying their best to add diversity to the game, but they were really just phoning it all in. And then from there you go to like, so just to let people know, the timeline of and the locations of the story, you start in New York and then you go to Tokyo in the second level. Then you go to Rio de Janeiro in the third level. Then you just go back to New York. And it has this completely half-assed story of the kids are doing drugs and they're trying to force these kids to do drugs and they're kidnapping them. And it's so stupid. It's so dumb.
Oh, this is totally like Reagan years anti-drug messaging, like hardcore.
Big time. And also the Rio de Janeiro level, as of every game of this time period, it, of course, is on a ship. You're in the ocean, you know, like doing that stuff.
But it's like the developers of this game have never heard absolutely anything about Brazil, because it's like you got a boat, then you got this jungle with volcanoes in the background, and then you got a Baron Samedi like voodoo guy as the
voodoo warrior.
Yeah, the voodoo warrior. Like, what does voodoo have to do with like Brazil? That's like so it's
like funny. Almost accidentally racist, right? It's like almost.
Yeah. Oh, and then when you rescue the children on the stages, I don't know if they're encased in glass or if they're like frozen in carbonite. I don't know what's going on with them, but these kids, they're very detailed and they're all kind of weird looking, but the Rio de Janeiro is this black kid with an afro and a smile and like a necklace. Like, he kind of looks like a little pimp, man. It's accidentally hilarious.
Well, and none of the kids look like kids. They all look like young adults. So I'm not sure in translation if that was what was going on. I feel like when they tried to localize this game to the US and they changed a lot of it, they were like, well, let's just roll with this and say they're kids. But they're clearly not children. They look of drinking age. But I'm not going to dive too deep into the game's lore because it's so like just off the cuff and sometimes feels like it's being made up as you go. But, you know, eventually you find yourself back in New York and then you go to the headquarters of the main bad guy and it's called the DRAT, D-R-A-T headquarters. And when you're on this level, the game decides that it's going to just change its mechanics again and have this weird, like, super punch out third person elevator scene and with these really horribly goofy animated characters that you shoot, you throw ninja stars at. And I just don't understand why they did that. It made the game worse.
Where did that come from? Like you get in the elevator and then the Black Manta is made of like a wireframe, kind of like the arcade
Punch-Out
game.
Yeah.
And then you either throw left, like diagonally left, right, and forward, and you just have to react really quick to the enemies that pretty sure they don't have any frames of animation either, right? They just kind of pop up.
No, it's two frames of animation. Like everything is in the game.
Yeah, so you do that, go through elevator to next floor, and then the next floor is your typical standard gameplay as the rest of the game. It just feels so disjointed. Like you should have left that in the cutting board. Someone probably designed it as a bonus stage or like something, and they said, yeah, let's just put it there somewhere.
Well, and also let me say something. This game might have, and I'm speaking about the NES console specifically, this game might have at least a top three worst final boss fight because of how ugly the character is. You walk up to a jukebox and you shoot the jukebox and it turns into this weird monkey man holding this kid. And it's moving back and forth, shooting at you with zero frames. And then you have to use all your different ninja combinations in a specific order. I swear to you, if you're listening to the show right now, do yourself a favor and look up the final boss of Wrath of the Black Ninja and watch that and tell me that is not the most like we're done making this, like whatever. I needed this on my desk yesterday kind of shit because it's bad. It's so bad.
And I got so lucky that, you know, there was actually a couple of you guys watching me stream the game because I got to the final boss and I'm like, what the hell do I do? And it has to be a specific order. You have four different magics. All of them have a different bottom combination to them. And you need the specific ones in specific order. One of them is not even damaging him. You just use it to go to the other side. Then you have to use one of them twice in a row. How are you supposed to figure that out?
And then it's game over. And then you get the funniest ending cutscene where your ninja takes off his mask and he looks like Joe Pesci with a giant afro. and you're like, what? And your sensei's there. And you're like, we saved the kids from drugs. Thank you. And I'm like, that is the perfect ending to this dog shit sandwich of a game. My God.
It's definitely an ending. The thing is, it's such a predictable ending to what you set out to do, save the children, and then your master is like, oh, you are the grandmaster now or whatever. And you're like, okay, sure. The thing is, I don't even know what was the end goal of the bad guys or how. Everything about this thing was just so goofy. It sounds like a four-year-old wrote this script, honestly.
Yeah, it's bad. And I think that to make matters worse, let's talk about the graphics and audio. So the music is kind of okay. Like the intro song is pretty decent. And then the music throughout the game is kind of all over the place, somewhere between okay and just annoying and bad. But let's talk about the graphics, because there's one big elephant in the room about a lot of the designs in the game. And some people might say, hey, these portraits, when you have these cutscenes, they're actually really high quality, really detailed. And these bosses, they actually don't look that bad. But why is that, Van? Let everybody know why that is.
So there was this book called How to Draw the Marble Way to Draw Marble marble characters, to draw in the style of marble, which I own that book, and it was a massive ripoff, by the way. It's like draw a circle, draw some lines, and then you have full character, all that steps in between, but I digress. The point is, there is a lot of pages there of just like sketches, and the goons, the boss from level one, everything is ripped off straight from that book. And we're talking shamelessly. They literally plagiarized this and slapped it in the game.
From the cover. The cover of the book has like three of the bosses in the game. Exactly. Like they, right when you think you're going to give this game credit, the game reminds you of how cheap and phoned in it is, to the point where the people making it were like, well, it's just like, I don't want to create, I don't know how to make original stuff, and I just bought this book, so let's just do this. Maybe nobody will notice. Oh, we noticed. We noticed, Black Manta producers.
No, and the funny thing is, if you look at the Black Manta himself looks very goofy and not super detailed at all. But then you have these very elaborate looking sprites for the enemies, because that's what they traced over those and slapped them in the game, just turned them into pixels.
100%. And the scaling is so off on everything. Like, the only scaling that does make sense is your character and the enemies you fight in the levels. Otherwise, every other boss you come across, sometimes cutscenes, the perspective and the scale is completely whack. And it just shows that they didn't give a crap, man. They were like, whatever, let's just get it out there and get our ninja money. Let's get those ninja bucks. So, I mean, is there anything else you want to add to the graphics and audio?
It's just a drab, ugly looking game. And the Black Manta is just like this weird pink burgundy color. Everything is gray. The even the guys, that the red guys, which I call them in the game, they kind of look brown. The thing is, your comparison point here, there's so many ninja games at that point, and like Ninja Gaiden and everything, even though their sprites are tiny, there's so much going on screen. This one, the sprites are huge, and just, it's just an ugly game, man.
Yeah, it's bad. So, with that said, let's give our final verdict. Okay, so Van, well, what's your verdict on Wrath of the Black Manta on the NES?
You know, it's funny that I'm always torn about this kind of games, like, because on one hand, you know, we just crapped all over this game. We crapped over the gameplay, the graphics. The music is kind of hit or miss, but there's only like three tracks in the whole game. So by the end, you're pretty much over it. But on the same way, you will watch one of those late 80s ninja exploitation movies, this game is so bad that I actually found it kind of enjoyable for all the wrong reasons. It's hilarious. Like, the cutscenes, the premise, everything is so stupid that I actually found myself enjoying the playthrough just to see how ridiculous it all was. So, even though the game is crap, I didn't hate it because I was amused. I was honestly amused while playing it.
Well, what grade would you give it then?
Oh, great. Oof. Wow. So if you want to play it as a meme, it's one thing. As playing it objectively, I will probably give this game somewhere like a D+. It's so blech.
Well, you know what's funny is I completely agree to your sentiment there about this game, and I can't believe I have to review this game again in my life, but here we go. This Wrath of the Black Manta is good old-fashioned NES bad. It's a dollar store ninja game where everything is clearly cheap and phoned in and just trying to make a quick buck. But because of its poor execution, it is hilarious. And I think it's worth experiencing because it has a short play time. And because of that, it's the only redeeming factor to it. I'm giving it the same grade I gave it 2 years ago, and that's a D. So, hey, there we go. It's a solid D game. It's funny. It's ridiculous. But, I mean, just don't play it otherwise unless you want to laugh. It's worth experiencing once. We kind of ruined a lot of the surprises in it, but as far as it being funny, but
even if we ruin it, you gotta see this for yourself. It once you see it in action and the ninja questioning everyone, no one knows anything. It's just funny. It's funny. So as a meme game, you know, it's a fun time. As a game, you know, in terms of awesome gameplay and all that, you know, and as a timeless classic, hell no.
It is a clinic in half-assery, as I put it before.
Yeah, it's one of those perfect Friday rental games. You went to Blockbuster, you got this, you played over the weekend, and you're like, man, that was crap, and never touched it again, pretty much.
It's also still like $7. I actually own a copy of it with the manual. So it's in my collection. It came in a lot, but I see it all the time at my retro game store, and it's always floats between $5 to $7. Never changes. Makes sense to me. All right, so it is my week to spin the wheel.
All right, spin that wheel.
So this is a game on the Sega Genesis. Sorry, little Ralph. 10 submissions. The game has 10 submissions. There's only 60 entries. It has such a high chance and never gets chosen. This is a game that was played on the 12 Minutes of Christmas marathon that I did in Christmas. I'm going to do it again because I had a lot of fun doing that. And it is a game based off one of the most popular Disney franchises. It's Aladdin. It's Aladdin on the Genesis, everybody. So our game for the next episode is the specific Genesis version of Aladdin. So how do you feel about that?
When I feel I'm finally out, they pull me back.
Well, I guarantee you, we know that it's going to be better than Wrath of the Black Manta. I want to thank the patrons. $2 can get you access to a bunch of exclusive content, like retro deep cuts, and it can prioritize your place in special events, like the Super Garbage Bowl we spoke about earlier. I want to give many thanks to our producer-level patrons. It is Kinshiro and M.K. Keith. Woo woo!
Keith!
If you got this far in the episode, please consider leaving us a review on however you listen to it, whatever program you use, Apple, Spotify, CrotchPod, whatever it is. It helps our show grow its audience and reach the ears of misfits like you and I. I want to give shout outs to shows I listen to regularly. The Sofa King podcast with my boy Brent Van Tassel. Remember the Game with Adam Blank and New Game Plus with all three of those jackals. Join the Discord. It's free. It's a small community of like-minded people, and you can vote on topics like the games picked in Backlog Eternal and also the upcoming Super Garbage Bowl, which is going to be a blast. I can't wait for it. It's going to happen very soon this summer. So all these links I spoke about are in the show notes. Please click the link tree and set yourself free. Van Fertile, I want to thank you for being an awesome co-host. And as usual, never judge a book by its grammar. Have a super garbage day and cut to B.
Thank you for watching with my dad. I just want to say, everybody, guys, bye.